I've asked Mandy to share, you know, 15 or 20 minutes. And I met Mandy 10 years ago when you still are a kid. You still don't have She hasn't aged in 10 years. So take it away, Mandy.
Do we have one else? Give you a break?
Sure. Hi, I'm Mandy. I'm a food addict and exercise addict. Hey, good to be here. And I must say, this is my first OA meeting with a lava lamp, so it's a big night. pretty cool OA meeting. But I just briefly want to talk about, I'm just going to read the Roseanne's Prayer again. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. So I've never spoken specifically on this prayer, but I wanted to, in reading it and talking about it, kind of break it down a little bit for you guys. In reading it, I think it helped me see in some ways how the big book becomes manifest and how what we read in our literature is really inherent in this prayer. So the first part when it talks about, that no longer is there a sense of hopelessness. You want to hold this?
Yes.
Okay. I want to talk about the hopelessness that we feel, that we no longer have to feel. In the Forge, the first edition, it says, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book." And that gives me hope because it talks about how we have recovered. You know, we hear debates about are we in recovery, are we recovered, but here it says we have recovered. Not that we're cured, not that we get to go eat whatever we want and be okay and not have the consequences, but when it's talking about the state of mind and body, that is hopeless, we are no longer in that position. Like today, I have a day of the reprieve. I'm sober today, I'm abstinent today, I'm not worried today about if I'm going to binge or not, but if I'm going to go to sleep with a food coma or not, if I'm going to wake up hating myself or not, like there's none of that. And that gives me hope, and I hope that gives you hope, that we never ever have to compulsively overeat again. And then also when it was talking about, no longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. So I wanted to read this. And this is in the second chapter, There is a Solution. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. So I think there's a lot of us in this room that we're pretty strong-willed. You know, if we set our mind to something, get out of our way, like watch out. But when it comes to food, like that is where I'm broken. That is where I'm weak. I cannot stop. Like if it's crumb versus me, the crumb wins. I can't, you know, and I'm coming from like weighing 50 or 60 pounds heavier than I currently do. I thought I was genetically engineered to be fat. I thought there are fat people and there are thin people. I'm one of the fat ones. Sucks for me. Get over it. You know, that's really what I thought, and which is pretty ludicrous now to look back, because I don't think we're dumb people, but I don't know why I didn't connect that I was eating a lot and that's why I was overweight. But for me, like, I didn't make that connection. I really just thought, is it my thyroid, you know? Please let it be my thyroid, because my willpower is broken, and so I can't fix it myself. I need you guys, I need the steps, I need a power greater than myself. Because then it says later, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. And that's critical. And that's why I need you guys. And that's why I need the steps, because I need to be unblocked from that higher power. If the problem is in my mind and my will is broken in that area, I need something outside of me to help. And that's why I need the whole program. And then it talks about, we're all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. So I wanted to walk through, I can take that. Okay, sure.
Thanks.
Thank you. How the fellowship is critical to working the tools, working the steps, with one caveat that when people first sobered up in AA, they did the directions in the book, and it worked. You know, the first 100, like, they sobered up and they stayed sober following it, and then they wrote it down so that people wouldn't mess it up, essentially. But over time, they found that there's also a power in the fellowship, that people can come to meetings and come around long enough and maybe not work the steps and get enough power just in the fellowship to stay sober for a while. But the problem is people started doing things differently. And I mean, people do things differently, so I don't want to knock that. But my point is, if we're not doing the deep down spiritual work that needs to be done, we can get something out of the fellowship, but it might not be everything we need, and it might not last, and it might not be that permanent recovery that we need to have that psychic change and that spiritual awakening. So just to keep that in mind, that I wanted to walk through the tools and the steps and how the fellowship and putting my hand in yours, so to speak, is so critical in order to recover. Partly because this is a disease of isolation that wants us dead. You know, essentially, that's what I have come to realize, is this is a disease of self-destruction that that might not be what the newcomer first wants to hear or hears when they come into the door, because maybe they're just here to lose a little weight and good enough. But for me, I'm an addict. I'm a hardcore addict. And I have a disease and a dark place inside of me that that I go if I don't have this fellowship and don't have you guys in the steps. So in terms of the tools, it starts with the plan of eating. I wasn't able to get sober until I got a sponsor to help me, until somebody told me what to do. So some people don't need that. Some people can do it on their own. Some people can find a structure that works for them. But for me, I was binging until somebody said, "I will sponsor you." And I said, "All right, you know, I'll take your help." And not because I wanted to really, but because I didn't know what else to do. So I think it's critical, whatever your plan of eating is, like, just don't do it alone. Don't try to figure it out yourself, you know, because that's what got you here. So if that worked, why were you here, you know? So get some help. And then also the accountability that having a sponsor has with the plan of eating is critical too. Because if you have a mind like me, I can start to cut corners and water things down and justify and rationalize until I'm back in the food, and it doesn't work. But then the second tool being sponsorship, that the sponsor's not just there to help me with my food then, but she's there to help me with my life. You know, that I don't want an unsponsored life anymore. I don't want to just get to do whatever I want, because that led to misery and a lot of selfishness. So now really to be accountable is such freedom, and to have somebody I can tell things to have somebody who can be there for me in dark times, like in death in the family, or in good times, like, you know, just different exciting life events. But for me, it's critical to have a sponsor, and also to be a sponsor that, I mean, the Big Book emphasizes over and over again that I have to constantly be thinking about other people and trying to be of service and doing for others, because I'm so self-centered. And with God's help, I can be free from that one day at a time. But it's so critical to give it away. I mean, it talks about when life, it works for rough times and in tough spots and in the trials and the low spots, we have to help others. And that looks different for each person. I think each person kind of has their own gifts about what they can do to be of service. Some people might be more interested in relationships. Some people have a gift of music. Some people have a gift for service, for kind of the details of organizing things. But we all have what we're gifted with. And then meetings, of course, that we need each other. We need, like, thank God that we have a place to go to, that whatever you're walking through right now, at least you're here. You know, that's huge. That's huge. And then telephone to connect with people. Kind of the community of recovery that I come from, they're hardcore into the phones, making phone calls and talking. And I think that helps develop a place to go so that you're in the habit of reaching out instead of picking up the food. Because if I just wait until I'm on the edge, or I just wait till I'm really desperate to make a phone call, then I'm too close already. So to stay more in the center and to work those phone calls and to put it first in my day, that if it's a busy day, all the more important to get it done early. I heard somebody say one time that, like, take a half hour quiet time each day, unless you're really busy, then take an hour. And, you know, kind of same thing. Like, when I start going to the place of, oh, my life is getting too busy and full to do my program, it's like, whoa, where did that come from? You know, don't let the gifts of the program take away the gifts of the program, and put first things first. So we got plan of meeting, sponsorship, meetings, telephone, writing. I think some of these things are very personal tools. Like, writing might be a very personal tool, but when I read to somebody what I wrote, when I have that, I can take a step back and personalize something and just be honest with myself when I'm alone. But then that helps enable me when I go to somebody to tell them the truth, even though I might be scared to say it, even though it might not be something I want to admit. For example, with the step work, if I need to talk about a resentment I have or a hard thing that happened or a pain in my life, or with the amends, to read it over with somebody, it just puts it in black and white and gets it in and out of me. I think there's something even to be said for muscle memory, like physically getting it on paper, and it has a beginning and an end, and then moving on. And then literature, I mean, when we read it together, it does something different. And anonymity, of course, not to gossip or drag anybody's name through the mud, so that we can have some integrity in our fellowship. An action plan, that as well is, I mean, if you have an action plan that's just for yourself, that for me is not that helpful, because I can give myself all kinds of motivations and goals that never really happen unless I say, okay, I am going to do this to somebody out loud. And then service, obviously service is a whole crux, you know, the whole thing leads up to step 12 of service, that when I get right with God and get right with myself and get right with my fellows, the purposes of having had a spiritual awakening, that I'm there then more able to help other addicts and practice these principles in all my affairs. Cause I like to say, when I die, I don't want the story of my life to be like, she ate a lot of good food and watched a lot of TV. You know what I mean? Like, that's a sad, sad story. But I think about that because I think about my free time. Like, how am I spending my free time? How many, like, Christmas cheesy movies have I watched, you know? But rather, instead, what am I going to do with the dash? You know, meaning people say, like, the year I was born, dash, the year I die, what am I going to do with my dash? You know, how am I going to spend my time? And the only thing really that seems to me of value that lasts a long time is, have I helped people? You know, did I ease somebody's breath a little bit today? You know, did I, was there joy brought into the day because of me, or did I try to suck things out of it? And I gotta be honest, a lot of times I'm like, wow, I was so selfish today, man, you know, God forgive me, and what corrective measures should be taken, not to be morbid and self, like, beat ourselves up, but really to say, okay, like, God, help me just do what you want me to do. You know, I'm broken. I surrender, whatever. Like, you take over and use me. So those are the tools. But then, talking about the steps, you know, that really, thank God for the fellowship. Thank God that there was Bill and Dr. Bob, and that they came together. And that's when things started rolling, you know, and that when things were tough, when Bill was having a tough day, thank God that he didn't pick up the drink, but instead, like, went to the phone, made a phone call, and found somebody else who he could help. And if he hadn't done that, I don't know if I'd be here. Because can you guys imagine if we didn't have someplace to go to tonight, or a fellowship? And even if you're struggling in the food, even if you're having a tough time, even if you're on the brink of giving up, or you're in it, you're, like, headlong in it, and you're like, I'm such a phony at this OA meeting. Like, you know, I don't know how you felt, but I felt in the beginning, I was still binging and going to meetings in the beginning, thinking, you know, just feeling like I had to get everything perfect and then I could go to a meeting. Yeah, right. You're like, who am I kidding? I'm going to a 12-step meeting and thinking that, oh, they don't know I have an issue, you know? I'm at a 12-step meeting. They know I have an issue, you know? So thank God for the fellowship that, but with the first step, really, that I think is the one area where nobody can do it for you. Like, that's the area you got to have the conviction. And there might even be people in your life telling you, you're fine. You know, it's not a big deal. Don't take yourself so seriously. Just lighten up. Just eat moderately. Like, don't beat yourself up, you know? And I agree with that. Don't beat yourself up. But for people who aren't addicts, for them to say, oh, lighten up, like, you know, I'm like, you don't see what's going on behind the scenes. You don't see the after party, you know? You don't see the tailgating that happens when you all go to sleep. And you don't see me waking up in the food coma the next morning hating myself, wondering, why am I here again? You know, so really to admit, I am powerless, and I have to get that. And if I don't get that, I'll just keep repeating it. But that being said, you know, I don't have to get it all at once. Sometimes I get it, and the longer I'm going to program, the more and the more deeply I get it. Like, I am just broken and need a higher power. And then kind of similar to step one and step two, that's something that people can help you with, and you can look at people as examples of how they've recovered and what God has done in their life. But at some point, you just have to take that step of faith. And it might be as simple and as scary beyond belief as just letting go of the food. To me, nothing is bigger leap of faith than an addict giving up their drug. You know, that is the free fall, like the letting go of my security blanket. Thanks. Like it says, that flimsy reed, you know, that actually turns out to be a loving and powerful hand of God. And then giving it to God. And we do that we can do that using the third step prayer with somebody else, as a witness, but just giving it up to God, that letting God take it all. And then the rest of the steps, I mean, the big book talks about, like, we need somebody there. If I think I'm doing a fourth step and all I'm telling is myself, something's wrong. You know, it's not going to work like that, because, and that's not to say that's bad at all. What I'm saying is, if we want freedom, we have to have somebody to hold our hand, and we tell them the depths of our soul, of things we don't even want to admit, and have them say, all right, you know, all right, what else? You know, like, nobody, you're okay. Even if you, and let me say this too, that I reached this point where I felt like if God can forgive me, like, and behind the scenes, like the scum of the earth, he can forgive anybody. You know, if God can love me, he can love anybody. So whatever you've done, and feel like if anybody ever found out, they'd be so, like, I'd be whatever. No, you know, God can forgive it. God can deal with it. God already knows anyway. So who are we kidding? There's nothing so heinous that God can't bring you back to him, you know? And so that's the message also I want to carry, is in the depths of the self-destruction or the darkness, there's nothing so bad that makes you unlovable by God. Like, you are loved by God no matter what, and you can come back to him. And that's how, like, for us, for me as an addict, that's how I get clean, is through the rest of the steps. You know, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then 8 and 9 is when we kind of move out into the world and start doing it, and getting clean that way. And that, don't do that alone, because you're just going to make it worse. If you try to do it alone, if you try to make amends and you haven't processed it through with somebody before you make amends, just take it from me. Thanks. It's a bad idea. or if you do this, I've done this too, that I know this is God's will for me, I'm going to hurry up and go do it before anybody else talks me out of it. Like, let that have alarm bells go off in your head, because not going to work. And then 10, 11, 12, just seeking God's will, and prayer and meditation. We need that time apart, absolutely. And we need that time imparting also. It's a give and a take and a relationship and engagement. But then, you know, practicing these principles in all our affairs. It's when we're with people also, and I think also when nobody's around. I think those are the most telling moments. When nobody's around and I could sneak a little, I mean, that right there is where the rubber meets the road. What am I doing with God and my honesty with food? Really the ultimate purpose is to know God, to love God, to know and serve my fellows, you know, and I fall short of that all the time. But I'm grateful to be here and to be in this program, and to be an addict for the most part. There are days too where I'm like, if there was a pill I could pop to not be an addict, sign me up, you know, cause who wants to trudge this road? But at the same time, what we really want, if we really want to be a maximum service, what other better way is there than to have a spiritual life in order to even survive? For me, having a relationship with God is not optional. You know, it's like, I have a relationship with God, or I use my drug and die. You know, it's that black and white for me. So, I appreciate being with you guys. It's awesome. And I love the lava lamp. So thanks.
Thanks, Mandy.
I have one more thing. Sorry.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
I have one of these, to whoever's newest. Is there less than 3 months in program? Less than 2 months? Less than 1 month? First meeting? Less than a month? I got lost. I'm confused. Who's the newest?
I think they're pretty new.
Okay, here you go.
All right.
And I hope they can share it. Yeah.
Here, so I'm going to open up for 10 minutes of sharing before we have our next speaker.
I'm Jan, and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater.
Hey, Jan. Hey, Jan.
I'd like to discuss the tool of the telephone. I just happened, when Mandy was sharing, I was thinking about Bill Colin Bob. And you know how hard that must have been with the rotary dial? I remember when I was a child, it was quite a long time ago, where we had the rotary dial, and if you premature took your finger out, it was the wrong number. And, you know, then, at least they didn't have 10 digits then. Oh, my God. You're all day, you know, getting it right. And now I have this fancy iPhone, and I can pick up a phone number by just a touch of my finger off of an email. It's just so much easier to call. Sometimes I wonder why, you know, I just don't do it more. But it really is a good tool to stay connected. And I'm really grateful for this fellowship to have really good friends. And what was shared earlier is, you know, my very best friends are in program. And that's, you know, I'm really, really grateful for that. And, you know, my life has just changed so much is that although, you know, the gifts of the program has kept me very, very busy and, you know, so many blessings, you know, so many that I can barely keep up with counting them all. But it gets confusing after a while. And I'm really grateful to come here in the calmness and just say, you know what, this part isn't confusing today. But another miracle is I can go and meet somebody for breakfast that just, I don't really didn't know them, but, you know, they asked me to go. And so I just said, okay, well, if I'm asked to go, I go. And, you know, there was just, God was present there. You know, I got more marching orders and more things that I'm supposed to be doing, you know, which is really cool because now I can pay attention and do those things. So, anyway, thanks for all that put this together. Oh, and the other thing is I really hope that Roseanne gets to hear this beautiful song. Yeah. And maybe you all should take the road to L.A. And it's so professional. So good. Thank you, thank you.
Thanks, Jim. My name is Amy Kudatic. I am really grateful. Tonight, you guys, I got the skin on it. This is like my Christmas gift to me. I don't know about other people, but I get so lost in this holiday. You know, and that's one of the reasons I had to numb out and lose food and alcohol is because I really couldn't do life on life's terms. And then when the holidays happen, it's kind of like I get drugged from the TV, from all the lights. What it tells me is that everybody knows what they're doing except me, you know, and it feels like everywhere I look, I can't get away from it. And so to come here and to be quiet and to, I thank you so much, Mandy, for just, I love the how-tos because I get lost by myself, you know, like, yeah, I've done the steps. Have I? You know, is it true for me today? And laying it out like that gives me a course, especially when it gets confusing. This program really is the day-to-time grace. The self-centeredness and the reality that I came here because of the food, but that I was my biggest problem, you know, has been real evident these last few days. And I went to a really neat, we actually had a holiday invite some years. That happens sometimes a dozen. And so I was at this place, and they had all the right dishes, all the right napkins, all the right food, the Christmas decorate. Nothing looked cheap, you know, that Christmassy stuff that doesn't look like it should be anywhere. And I just left there, had a great time, and just took the jump off the bridge, you know, of like, I don't do this right either, you know. And that was kind of the chapter in every part of my life. And so I come here with people from all different walks of life, and I feel okay. And I can take in that I know that you guys care. And the outside world cares a lot for me, but I can't take it in without the fellowship here, without working the steps, without staying connected, without making the calls, without reading the literature, without doing service. So, you know, every day you guys keep me alive for one more day. And so I'm really grateful. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
I'm Shayna, Foodetic and Malina.
Hi, Shayna.
And I'm really grateful to be here tonight. And I just want to thank everyone who put this on. Thank you, Virginia, Tom, Amy. Anyone else who put this on, just because I know it takes a lot of work to be of service. It takes work, and it's like I've done quite a bit of service work last year, and it really, really strengthens your program so much. And so I guess that's kind of my telling myself I need to, you know, do something. But also just showing up at a meeting sometimes is just enough service, you know? It's just being available. And I've been abstinent now a little over a year, and I'm so grateful for every day. And also, I have to say, I've been coming to the program since 05, so it took me, you know, what, 5 years to get abstinent and to coming here. And I did the steps, and I got involved with fellowship, and I did all this stuff. But I think what really changed for me was when the sponsor I had, she was like, why do you want to be abstinent? Why do you want to stop throwing up? And it was because I wanted to appear to have all my shit together finally, you know? It wasn't to help other people. It wasn't to be of service. It wasn't to help people with my experience. And I think things started to change for me when it became about other people. And it says in the big book, that is our purpose, is to be of service to God and to the people about us. And I didn't really want that. You know, I wanted the new car, the nice house, the thin body, you know, those things a lot more. And I have to say that little by little, coming over year after year after year, it changes a little bit. And I haven't been coming to as many meetings, and I feel it. I really can feel that the selfishness just creeping in different ways more, the panic of, you know, what about me, you know? And it's just so old. It gets so old and so sick of it, and I think I'm just so grateful that I have a plan. I know what else I can do. You know, I know how to get out of it. I know that I don't have to stay this way, because I just, my idea of getting out of thinking about me was just thinking about me more, you know? And thinking about somebody else, that it just never absolutely ever occurred to me. So I love that I can come to meetings too and get out of the denial of my selfishness. You know, it's like, no, I'm not selfish. I think about other people all the time. It's just, you know, this area or that area. So I'm just so grateful to have program. And I took today off of work. So it was my birthday last week, and this is my birthday present to myself, because I'm worth it, you know. And I had a girlfriend that would always say, you're worth it. We're worth it. And I never understood what it meant, but I'm starting to now, that, you know, all this work, all this time, you know, I'm worth it. You know, I'm worth being a better person. I'm worth getting to know who I really am. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.